Welcome to the OM Podcast, Out West podcast all about the mobile industry. My name is Keith and I'm joined today by Danny and Lucia today. Hi guys.
Hi guys.
Hello.
From all the way across the desk, we're in a different room today and it's all feeling very scary and very, it's messing with my chi.
It is.
We don't have that big room. And it's a very special morning edition of the OM Podcast this week. We've all gathered here this morning to introduce our newest guest, Mr. Monty Hamilton. Welcome.
Well, thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be here. I don't know the other room, so this all looks very professional and fantastic.
It's the other room's like 10 times as professional as this one. It's so professional.
Okay, now I've got envy.
Room envy. I should mention your title, Mr. Monty, is the Digital Operations Director at Telstra.
Wow, that sounds very fancy.
It does. What does a Digital Operations Director at Telstra do?
Well, it's interesting. The first thing is we don't really get hung up on the titles at Telstra very much. I work in our Telstra Digital, and I guess I have the privilege of leading a team that look after around 7 million customer interactions each month across our website.
That's a lot of interactions.
It is. Unsurprisingly, at a company the scale of Telstra, our customers are increasingly choosing digital. So I look after our website, our mobile apps, Telstra 24/7, and also our social media service, or 24/7 digital customer care, as we call it.
So I assume it used to be something like analog operations at Telstra with all the rotary dialers and everything, and over time it's become digital. Has it always been a title, or at least a job there at Telstra to have like digital operations?
Look, I think it's something that we really kicked off in earnest around 3 years ago, and we, with the formation of Telstra Digital as a business unit. And what was probably significant about that is that alongside our contact centre channels and our retail channels, we launched a Telstra Digital business unit, which was really looking at ways to complement our retail store experience, our contact centre experience, with a growing choice and preference of customers to interact via digital.
And how is that transition moving along? I mean, what can you talk about the percentage of customers that sort of interact with Telstra digitally through these channels?
Yeah, absolutely. So unsurprisingly, as that behavioural shift has taken place by customers, the percentage of our transactions at Telstra has increased sharply. So at the end of FY13, a couple of months ago, we're at 46% of our customer interactions taking place in digital. So you can see we're on the verge of becoming more digital company from transaction mix than we are physical. And that's up from 21% over 3 years ago. So it's been quite a significant growth, and it's really quite exciting for us to be meeting our customers' needs in that space. And it's a great part of the company to work in.
Do you see that? I mean, what's the view internally of where that number gets to in 10 years' time? Does it ever get to 100%, or does it sort of sit at 90%?
No, I don't think it ever gets to 100%. I think, as amazing as digital technology advancements are, whether that's, whatever screen size or whatever wearable device that may hit the market, and we're never going to replace that desire for people to interact face-to-face or to talk to each other on the phone. I think what we're seeing at the moment is a massive effort barrier that's been removed to customers interacting with organisations. And at Telstra, that's the same for us. There are some transactions now that a customer can perform in 60 seconds that they may have otherwise had to spend their lunch hour doing, visiting a store, or spend 10 or 15 minutes doing on the phone. And that's not about us actively moving that behaviour. It's about supporting the customer's choice and convenience.
It must be a bit of a challenge because the digital environment is changing so quickly. How does Telstra kind of manage to plan out what channels it wants to use, or what technology it wants to kind of use?
Well, if we look at the customer sales and service piece, there's a number of trends that are emerging. So, no surprise that mobility is a big focus for our core business. We are increasingly servicing customers on mobile handsets. I think we have to be, in some cases bold and back some new and emerging technologies, but there's a lot of safe bets that we can follow. And, 3 years ago we were talking about the death of the corporate website. I can tell you we're a far way from that. In fact, when the traffic numbers, it's around 7 million unique device visits to Telstra.com each month. So our corporate website's far from dead. In fact, it's the primary destination for our customers. It's the largest channel that Telstra operates.
When do you, I guess, it's interesting. I mean, I'm not sure how long you've had a presence on social media. Is it must be a couple of years now?
Over 7 years now.
Dave. On social media. Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've always looked at our presence in social media as an access point for customers.
Yeah.
Whilst the corporate website and Telstra.com is a great destination, we acknowledge that our customers are having good and perhaps less so impressive experience with our products and services, and sharing those experiences on Twitter and Facebook and other properties. And so for us at Telstra, it's about being accessible. And that's backed by two things. It's backed by 24/7 access, because it's not for us to determine our customers' business hours. And it's about being accessible in the properties that customers choose. And Facebook and Twitter are the two obvious ones. Google Plus is an emerging one.
Do you have that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, do you have a presence on Google Plus? And we talked just before we started recording about Yo. Do you ever see a time where you're going to be interacting with customers over platforms like Yo or Snapchat or, you know, these emerging? I mean, how do you analyze whether a platform's ready to be supported for a in your social channel?
I think there's clearly a critical mass, a barrier to entry there. But that's really, today, it's driven by our customers' choice. Mm. So if enough of our customers are active in a particular digital community, then that warrants our presence. Facebook's obvious. Over 12 million active Facebook users in Australia. We have over 16 million mobile services in operation. Mm. So the Venn diagram overlays in a pretty big way. So And Twitter's, whilst Twitter might have not have the same user volume, they're very active. Twitter users and many of our customers using Twitter are actually helping other Telstra customers find or navigate a solution to a problem that they've got. So there's some great opportunities for us to build advocacy in that space, and most importantly, just help customers at a time of need. We have presence on Instagram and Google Plus. They're really great engagement tools for us at the moment, but we're not seeing huge service demand in those places and those destinations. Reaching out to customers on Yo, I don't know, maybe. If someone wants to Yo Telstra, then please do.
Yeah.
I'm sure we've registered the account. If we haven't, we will be before this goes to air.
I'm trying to get it first. Hang on.
you can Yo me. I'm Monty Hamilton, so go for it. Very creative.
Yo. Yeah. It's really interesting. I get the sense when I'm, as a customer, I have a few services with Telstra, but, as a customer with anyone, I get the strong sense that social media is a very important medium for most big business, most business these days. And it feels like you get a much faster response when you do something on social media than you would get through traditional channels. I also sense that when I've dealt with Telstra in the past and others, where you do the live chat, which I just love. I love that you can do stuff on live chat while you're doing other stuff on your desktop, that you get a better response. Is that stuff, do you put your A-grade operators on those tools?
No, not at all. I mean, there's no preferential services offered via those channels. It's choice is the key word here. And at different times of the day, there might be different wait times in live chat. There might be different response times on Facebook or Twitter, as there might be wait times when you call us. So there's no active manipulation, if you like, behind the scenes for the service experience that's offered. Live chat's fantastic. Live chat has been fantastic for our customers because they're really benefiting from multitasking. And if you find when you're on the phone, there's an expectation that, when you call your friend, there's an expectation that you're there and listening and active in the conversation. Mm. However, if you're instant messaging with a friend, there isn't a space between where you can multitask. So if you're running a small business and being able to live chat with Telstra, if you're on barista duties that afternoon, then this is a possibility that previously you couldn't access if you had to sit there with your phone against your ear or hands-free kit in to receive customer service. So There's no preference or higher priority offered. It just ebbs and flows throughout the day.
Okay.
But 24/7 and access is the key theme.
So let's talk a bit about 24/7 and the app specifically. I mean, we are into mobile and apps here. So tell us about 24/7. What was the reasoning behind it? How's it going? And where do you see it in a few years' time?
Well, 24/7 was one of the first things we kicked off in our three-year journey to date in Telstra Digital. 3 years ago, there was a lot of excitement in app space, but perhaps a little less utility. And we saw this as a great way of actually enriching the relationship and removing some of those barriers or effort challenges that customers were having dealing with Telstra. 24/7 is, you know, at times you could say it's a little boring, right? It has your Telstra bill in there. It has your usage information. All of your product services are accessible. And we're keen to keep it that way, keen to keep it basic and enable customers to do what they want to do with Telstra quickly and easily. And that's very much been the pathway to date. We have over 1.7 million active users of the 24/7 app across Android, BlackBerry, Windows, and of course iOS on iPhone and the iPad, where we've got a great experience for both the larger and smaller factor screens. Where to from here? We're big on connecting our customers' experience across all the three key channels that we operate. So, of course, we want to enrich our store experience when a 24/7 app user visits one of our stores. So we're looking at ways that we can use low-energy Bluetooth to enrich that experience where the customer chooses to do so. And perhaps when you're calling our contact center, are there things that we can do when you call to make that experience a little easier, such as passing your identification and authentication from the app directly into the contact center experience. So whilst we've focused very much on getting the digital experience right, there's a great opportunity now for us to enrich that multi-channel or omni-channel experience.
How does Telstra decide on what new features or these new ideas that you're talking about, that, you know, low energy Bluetooth, how does the company decide what to do? Where, is there an ideas engine or something?
There's a range of inputs. The first is very much what our customers ask and seek from us. Yep. Now, customers aren't asking us to integrate low energy Bluetooth into the app, but they're absolutely asking for an enhanced store experience. And we've got some fantastic things on the way in that space. So it's our job to really translate the need and opportunity that our customers help surface using a technology layer to actually bring that to fruition. Of course, we also have some experiences on the web and other interaction channels that we haven't quite closed the gap for yet in mobile. So we're always looking at ways to see how our customers are using, for example, our My Account experience in a typical web browser. Are there particular transactions or use cases there that we can build out into the 24/7 app experience to make it better and more accessible for customers?
So I noticed that the 24/7 app on at least Android, because that's what I'm interested in, is a native app. I assume, are they native for the other platforms as well?
Absolutely native.
So what drives that decision as to go native instead of hybrid?
Typically, there's a transactional experience, and when you're transmitting data versus quite rich graphical components, we know we can deliver a better native experience on the device. Now, if our app was a news app and delivering, you know, video content or delivering editorial content, then there's probably a better use case for a hybrid or just a simple browser destination. We're delivering quite a neat native experience today, and we do have some hybrid features. We've done our best to kind of ensure that the user experience is protected. There are some advancements in technology that aren't quite there yet. So, for example, taking payments, we know we can deliver a better experience by a hybrid browser experience where a customer enters their credit card details through that payment journey. And, of course, we take PayPal for bill payments at Telstra. So we're working closely with PayPal, but today that's a hybrid experience. Mm-hmm. And our customers quite like the familiar PayPal screen that they're used to when they're making payments, you know, whether it's an eBay item or another e-commerce purchase. They're familiar with that PayPal buying journey.
It's interesting you talk about PayPal, because I've noticed I actually pay my Telstra bill now via PayPal, because I just find it super easy. You know, I know my login, I don't know my credit card number and CCV number. What percentage of customers pay via PayPal? And is there something you've got the detail on you can talk about?
I don't have the specific details with me today, Danny. What I can tell you is that the customer take-up of PayPal has been quite surprisingly high for us. And whether that's the convenience factors that you just mentioned or just an enabling choice for our customers, not everyone has their wallet or purse handy or their card number memorized. Now, I do, which probably is a bit scary. But I find myself using PayPal because my email address is pre-populated and I need only enter my password and choose my funding method to make that payment. So it is quite easy. But it all comes back to choice. The take-up has been surprisingly high, and that's great. That proves that our customers are benefiting from a decision we've made to work with a business like PayPal and enabling that as a payment method for Telstra bills.
Yeah, you mentioned trying to make things more convenient for the customer and things like that. I'm reading here that Telstra is using a shared Facebook login now. So you can log into your Telstra account using your Facebook account?
You can. We've worked closely. I mentioned earlier that with over 12 million active Facebook users in Australia and 16 million mobile services in Australia, that at Telstra that overlap is quite significant. So, again, this comes back to accessibility and choice. And there's something frustrating sometimes around having to remember a username and password for every website that you deal with. So working with Facebook to use the Facebook Connect experience, we're enabling very active Facebook users a more streamlined experience on Telstra.com. And that's great. Customers don't need to re-authenticate to view commonly accessed information such as data usage or access to their bill. So is it used by 100% of our customers? No, but is that a value-add service to active Facebook users who are also customers of Telstra? Yes.
It's one less thing to remember.
It is.
What goes into the decision to choose Facebook? I mean, obviously Facebook was quite big, but has Telstra considered other single sign-on type things as well?
We have. We've made quite a significant investment in identity management over the last few years, and that's primarily focused on helping deliver a more reliable and consistent experience for Telstra customers wherever they're interacting with us. So our AFL and NRL apps using the Telstra ID have enabled, I guess, a reverse federation of identity management where Telstra customers are able to use those apps seamlessly logging in using their Telstra ID. So there's kind of two sides to the ledger here. Do we federate out or federate in? Facebook's been a logical choice. However, there are a number of other opportunities, whether that's using the Google ID or other dominant or large user authentication standards.
Yeah.
Cool. We're talking around social media a lot. I guess we're really interested in how social media has kind of changed the customer service landscape. Can you tell us a bit about, was there a point that Telstra decided, okay, social media is going to be something that we have to build on now? And how did that decision come about?
So it was a conscious decision. And now over 3 years ago, we decided we would never close our 24/7 digital customer care. And you can't call it 24/7 if you choose to close it.
Just
So we named it almost by chance because we wanted our customers to be able to access our services whatever time of day it was. And with the customers travelling, and when we're in Australia, right, there's three time zones here and a lot of us are travelling, and if you get off the air, the aeroplane in Paris and your phone's not working, you don't really care what time it is in Australia. You need your phone to work, and so being accessible to help customers is important. So we actively chose to be quite accessible in terms of time of day and set up dedicated a team which is based in Adelaide. We have over 40 people operating 24/7 to support our customers in Facebook, Twitter and Google Plus. And there's a couple of figures that you could use to consider, right? So in 2012, 36% of Australians were cited their daily use of social media. Now that's 45% at the end of 2013. And of course, 2014, you can probably see that trending over 50%. But there's an interesting insight here, which is how customers' intent has changed to deal with brands in social media. And if that was 43% in 2012, in 2013, up 9 percentage points to 52%. So there's a clear desire for customers to interact not only with friends and family, but also with brands when it comes to different service interactions. But brands absolutely have to respect that. It's not a shameless marketing channel, and we've seen many examples globally where that's worked or backfired against brands. And our lens at Telstra is we consider it a privilege if a customer chooses to like us or follow us, depending on what the property is. And we respect the fact that a post from Telstra will appear in a timeline that is surrounded by quite emotional and significant events in a customer's life. And that customer may have had a post beforehand sharing their best friend's birthday party photos from the weekend, and a post that follows ours that talks about the new arrival of a family member in a different country. Mm. So it's very important that you look at every interaction you're having with that emotional lens. It's not a right for brands to post content into a customer's timeline. It is indeed a privilege.
When you're, when you're, I mean, I know from, you know, we do quite a bit of work with Telstra, as you know, but when you're at a barbecue or at a birthday party and you tell people that you work at Telstra, I'm sure you get you might get sort of a barrage of comments, oh, can you do this or can you do that? How do you respond as a Telstra employee to those situations?
Well, firstly, I'm very proud of where I work. I love the company and the opportunities that present. And one of the reasons I joined Telstra was the opportunity to make digital change at scale. And there's few businesses that where you can do that at in Australia. My background is in financial services, so I'm quite familiar with scenarios where customers have less than satisfactory service interactions. So I'm always open to the opportunity to help. In fact, I was at a business breakfast yesterday where a customer mentioned every month I have to call Telstra to have something corrected on my bill. And it's quite easy for us. We ask what the problem is, ask for permission to look up the customer's account, take a business card if they've got one, or contact details and make sure we resolve the problem. Yeah. And that starts with the leaders in the organisation, and that's a responsibility I take very seriously. We can't push that responsibility to particular departments or divisions in the company. Every one of the Telstra employees is responsible for the customer service experience. And there's a great little thing we actually built last year called Snap. Snap is an employee app that all Telstra employees have, and they can report a fault or a customer issue using their app. Now, a couple of months ago, I was at Bondi and I saw that the phone booth was broken. Someone had broken the plastic shell off the roof of the phone booth. I took three photos of that and I uploaded them through Snap, and the team that manages our telephone booths around the country responded to me later that afternoon, and the team was mobilized within 24 hours to go and fix it. So there's a bit of crowdsourcing, if you like, going on within the company, which is exciting. But this comes back to a mindset and an attitude of we care, and every Telstra employee cares. That's part of who we are. It's a responsibility we take very seriously.
Mm. That's a really interesting idea, because Telstra's obviously got a lot of employees, so there's kind of a community there that you can reach out to kind of feed the level of service increases, because you're kind of helping each other. It doesn't matter where you work or which department you're in.
Well, absolutely. It's a cultural change.
Yeah.
So companies increasingly with a top-down culture are not representative of the most successful companies, and we believe that empowering all of our people to do good things is underpinning any cultural change in the organisation, and obviously a resultant customer experience change. So crowdsourcing and working with our customers, but also enabling all of our people to have customer service interactions or address customer needs is important. For over 3 years now, we've run a destination called Crowd Support. There's over 150,000 customers and employees who are members of that community, and our customers are having very rich conversations with our employees. Now, our employees aren't paid per se, or it's not in their job description to be having those conversations. However, there's an incredible amount of intellectual property that exists in our employees, and to be able to bring that conversation into a digital community is a prime example where it's a cultural mindset first, accelerated with the technology enabler.
So how do you moderate something like Crowd Support, where you've got this great big huge open forum and there's lots and lots of Telstra customers and Telstra employees all speaking in this kind of public realm?
Well, moderation is an interesting concept. At one end of the scale, moderation is defined or perceived as control. And the reality is that an organisation like Telstra is not going to control the conversation. The conversation's taking place, whether it's on a community like CrowdSupport or a destination like Whirlpool. So our goal is to actually join the conversation and earn the right to have to be a participant in that conversation. And that's a flat hierarchy. And that's one of the great things when we talk about social media. It's two people having a conversation. It's not about a brand hierarchy talking down to or perceived to be talking down to a customer. So the conversation is flat. And moderation for us is quite simple. We don't moderate for good or indifferent views of our products and services. We moderate around things like coarse language and discriminatory post. And that's where our moderation stops. Yeah. And we have trust and confidence in our people and customers to have a friendly and productive conversation. And, I think a business like eBay was born on a basic principle that most people are good. Mm. They want to do good things. And if you try and control an experience for the 98% of the good by managing it for the bad, well, then the outcome's kind of predetermined.
Let's change gears a bit. I'm interested in your views on mobile and where the world is heading from a mobile perspective. That's a broad question, but what's as a senior person at Telstra, which is Australia's leading telco, what's your view on mobile? Where's it going? Where do you see handsets evolving to? What do you see with the tablet market? I think it's very interesting. We had the recent Apple results. There was like a slight dip in tablet sales, and that's kind of a hot topic. What does the world look like from your seat?
Well, clearly, connectivity's transition from historically fixed into the theme of mobility, and the first and flagship entrance into that space has clearly been voice, and then followed by text messages. So there's this evolution here where breaking the cable or need to be physically at a location to connect has been removed, and mobility's really taken over. And we've seen this transition away from predominantly voice and short message interactions into data. So data is absolutely the backbone of the mobility growth engine, and that's evident on our own network, where growth rates continue to accelerate exponentially year on year. And so we're investing quite heavily to prepare for that next wave of growth. 4G has been a massive investment area for us. It's four times the geographical coverage area than any other competitor in Australia, which is a big deal. And I think it was only just in the last 48 hours that we've turned on the 700 megahertz spectrum in Adelaide and Sydney following some regional trials. And
I saw that announcement. What does that actually mean for me as a Telstra customer in Sydney?
Well, it's a good question. I'm far from the brightest engineering mind at Telstra. However, what I can tell you is that it's about greater range and better in-building coverage. Right. In addition to that in-building coverage is actually just greater network capacity. And there are still times, hopefully a lot fewer, where significant events may experience some network congestion, and we're always looking to get on the front foot to be ahead of that curve. But that's all driven back to your question around this consumer behaviour, which is all seeing masses of data growth. And to date, that's on mobile and tablet. We talked earlier before the show around the growth in wearables. There's a lot of speculation around new hardware that might hit the streets. There's no doubt that the average array of connected devices that the average consumer has is growing. 3 years ago, it was probably an average of the smartphone. Everyone was grabbing at a smartphone, and now people have a connected tablet. We're seeing now lablets, this hybrid space between the laptop and...
I haven't heard that before, lablet. Have you heard that?
Lablet.
I've heard of the phablet.
That's the breaking of the keyboard from the traditional laptop. So you can plug it back in and use it almost as a...
The Surface-style device.
Yeah, similar to the Surface. I think Lenovo have got a similar product. So, and that's big in the corporate space. So as great as something like the iPad is for consuming content... if you've ever been stuck in a hotel at 7 in the morning to pulling together a PowerPoint presentation, we all know that there are still some limitations in that space. So there's a proliferation of devices which is enabling consumer choice, and the lines between these categories are really getting grayer and grayer. But the evolution of the smartwatch is going to be interesting, dominated by fitness, but we see great opportunities in the health space. The Samsung product, you say, has a heart rate monitor built into it. So, there are some traditional products in that space which are already facing disruption. You know, you don't have to wear a strap around your chest anymore when you go running to get some basic...
Do you see a time where, you know, at the moment, smartwatches, I've got a Pebble and we've got a couple of, you know, the LG and the Samsung...
The best smartwatches, yeah, the Android Wears.
Yeah, in the office. Do you see a time where they're going to have SIM cards? They're going to be connected devices that don't rely on a tether?
Well, SIM cards really just a vehicle of authenticating the network. So whether a SIM card is used to actually connect those devices, I don't know. But what is evident is that these devices are going to be always on and always connected.
Yeah, right.
There's a lot of advancement taking place in battery cell capacity. It's still a big barrier. I'm sure, you know, maybe just a show of hands or audible alert. How many of you have got a portable battery charger that you pack when you travel?
Yep. Apparently shopping for one, yep.
So this is important, right? Some people still can't get throughout, a couple of days if you're traveling. You might want to pack all your goodies, but you pack that. So being always on equals always powered up as well. But these connected devices, whether they're using Bluetooth to connect to a hub device or connecting to the network on their own, it's the notion is connected. They may well exist on their own, but that the hub is still the smartphone for those devices.
Yeah.
Do you think that with the proliferation of the different devices, it's great for the consumer, it's great for the end user, it must be a huge challenge for a company like Telstra to manage all its digital products across these different devices. How does that work?
Well, have you started building a version of 24/7 for Android Wear or for Pebble?
We're experimenting.
Yeah.
Well,
we do the version, the AFL Live version for Pebble, which is a great fun app. But yeah, back to the question, I guess.
Yeah, I think one of the great things that we're seeing here is actually just an extension of the operating system. Now, Samsung's taken a slightly different path with their own operating system. The key is how you actually design and build these services from the start. Now, you can build an amazing native app experience for a 4.7-inch Android screen. But if you're so obsessed in perfecting it for that screen that you lose sight of the underlying services and infrastructure that drive it, then you are going to create some challenges when you move to a different form factor device, whether it's a watch screen or a tablet. So we're always looking to ensure that, you know, the key underlying infrastructure that drives these digital services is built in an extensible enough way that we can take those services out to a different screen or form factor. And, you know, I think iPad and iPhone is a great example. Historically, you know, we actually built two different versions of the app, and now with advancements in iOS, we're able to bring those together and actually just deliver a different front-end experience based on the form factor of the device.
I know you've got the 24/7 for iPad, so you're saying that's going away and it's just going to be one universal app that
That's right. Works. We're bringing the apps together. So Telstra 24/7 will absolutely be available on the iPad. Yep. However, we'll use the same code base for iOS. And that's important. That will help us bring greater speed to market on releases. And sometimes purely by usage numbers, we're driven to deliver that on iPhone first and then follow with an iPad release. And now we'll be able to do that all in one go.
Can I ask you about the way that Australians buy phones? Because I think you have a pretty interesting view on that.
Well,
being in your position, do people, I mean, I know the trend, you know, in the US is obviously to buy phones on contract, but in Europe I hear that it's more people go out and buy, you know, they just buy outright phones and then get their own SIM card and they're not subsidised. What's happening in Australia?
Look, there's a real mix, and some of that depends primarily on the customer's intended use for the device. So in a business environment, all of those subscriptions and relationships are quite different. There's typically a master account where employees' phone services will be connected into a master account. But if we focus specifically on the retail segment, prepaid is quite a very big market for us at Telstra. And that can be anything from someone who's arrived from overseas, who's travelling for a few weeks, And of course, that product, you know, whether it's putting a prepaid Telstra SIM into existing hardware or picking up a prepaid handset from our great range at an airport or another Telstra store, that's a great flexible option for someone for a intended use case. Now, if you intend to use your phone for 24 months, then taking a phone on a plan is a great option too. So, you know, handset subsidies are great. They provide a great flexible option for customers to avoid having to pay an upfront outright cost for a handset. But it is really horses for courses. So it's about providing customers choice of the option that they want that best suits their needs.
And just go back to the prepaid versus postpaid. What are you seeing? Are you seeing a kind of, I mean, we started with postpaid and there was no prepaid. Now there's obviously a mix in the market. Which way is it trending? Are more people taking prepaid options?
We're experiencing growth across the board, which is a good thing. I couldn't tell you the exact split between postpaid and prepaid at the moment. I know we've had significant growth in prepaid over the last 12 months, which has been fantastic. But our postpaid subscribers have grown at the same time. It comes back to the consumer choice. Now, I don't have the specific figures.
We'll talk about consumer choice and handsets now. We've obviously seen a trend to bigger screens. Is that something you see continuing? And where does a phone stop being a phone and becoming a phablet or a tablet? What is, you know, in 3 years' time, will we all be walking around with 7-inch phones stuck on our head, or is it sort of 5 or 6-inch? Personal opinion. I mean, I know you don't know the answer, and it's not a Telstra question, but
I think it's a really interesting observation. I was in Hong Kong a few months ago, and I used to think there was a correlation between the size of one's hand and the ability to use a larger phone screen. So Apple have obviously stayed true with a narrow device, and they've chosen to, you know, stretch the height of that device, and who knows what's coming next from them. However, I've recently been using an Android device that was up over 5-inch screen, and actually I was really struggling with the notion that I couldn't operate that device with one hand anymore. So I went back to the Nexus 5, which I'm really liking at the moment. I think that's 4.7?
Yeah, it's around 4.7.
Yeah, so I find that very useful because I can reach from, reach to the top left corner with my right thumb. Don't try that at home. No, it's, so it really, if you're happy using a phone with two hands and perhaps you've moved into a smartphone from a BlackBerry where you had a traditional QWERTY keyboard, then that's great. But things like Swipe are really enabling that one-hand operation. Who knows? It really comes down to what type of content you're going to... What you're going to be doing with your phone and the type of content you're consuming. It'd be really neat to sit on a plane and watch a movie that you've bought to... on a larger screen. I don't do that on my phone, so I'm quite comfortable with a 4.7-inch screen.
So I've got quite a self-serving question here because I'm the Android team lead, so I'm very interested in the Nexus. Telstra are one of the only carriers, I think, that actually offer the Nexus on plan. Don't quote me on that, but it's one of the only ones I've noticed anyway. What led to that decision? Because the Nexus is a very Google-centric device, originally designed for developers, and it just seems to have just been picked up quite a lot. I mean, normally when you go into a shop, you'll see your Samsungs and HTCs and your Sonys and things. Do you know sort of how the Nexus got into a Telstra shop, and keep encouraging that?
Okay, well, you can come in to the store and we'll give you a nice Android T-shirt.
I will do that.
And an ice cream sandwich.
Danny, can I have a day off just next week?
Well, I think the experience you get from Nexus is pure Google, and I think as developers, we sort of like that, you know, that untainted. Experience. So yeah, back to the question, I guess.
I mean, personally, I love the Nexus 5, and I've been using it now for over 6 months, and keep coming back to it despite a few temptations to the contrary. So it comes back again to choice. So I mentioned earlier this 16 million mobile services in operation. So you can't just indoctrinate a particular handset range upon customers. And you know, we're big about enabling a choice in that space, and we have a great relationship with Google. And to be honest, it's quite exciting to see you know, not only Android and iOS, but the emergence of other operating systems. And you know, if you've been a Windows user you know, through and through for years, then you know, you can imagine that that's a logical operating system choice for you when you go to upgrade from a feature phone to a smartphone. So come back to choice. You know, I love the Android version running on here. I'm excited about the new Android L. Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's in beta at the moment. I haven't quite upgraded this device.
I don't recommend doing it on your daily driver.
Right.
It is still in beta.
I like the term daily driver. I only have one daily driver. But it works, and I love it. And I think that I don't know the specific sales figures relevant to other Android handsets. There's certainly a familiarity that comes with a brand like Samsung when someone comes into our store, and you know, the Samsung products are fantastic. I mean, the you know, how thin the S5 is. It really is a nice phone, and the back of it's you know, quite comfortable in the hand. But yeah, you know, I've been really impressed with this product from LG and Google and collaboration. I am quite excited that Google's collaborating with the manufacturers and doing so in a non-exclusive way. So you know, we've seen them work with Asus or Asus, depending on you know, which side of the border. And you know, obviously this is a product that they've worked with LG to deliver. And I'm not sure. Do you guys know who the if there's a Nexus 6?
Yeah, I was going to ask you.
The rumor mill. Here's where I get to be a nerd. The rumor mill is saying it's not going to be called Nexus 6. Apparently, it's going to be called Nexus X, so they don't get sued. Because originally, when Google brought out the Nexus line, there was a chap who wrote a series of books. I can't remember it. What the name of the books were now, but he had a Nexus 6 in the books. So I think the rumor is they're going to avoid 6. But I think it's HTC is the loudest rumor at the moment.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know. I was hoping you did. No, I was going to try and eke it out of you somehow.
If I do, I can't disclose. No, yeah. Honestly, I have no idea. But I think if it's as good a product follow up to what they've done with the Nexus 5, then whatever it's called and whoever they work with, I think it's you know, it's got a hard act to beat or hard act to follow.
Have you heard of Project Ara from Google? It's a modular smartphone.
Oh, yes, I have. Yeah? Yes, yes.
Do you think Telstra would be in a position one day to sell a modular smartphone?
Well, we talked earlier about what's pitch. Next and what's the evolution. So, I mean, that's really customer choice at the next level. So, you know, if you don't use the camera on your phone, well, then put the cheap 2 or 3 megapixel or 1.2 megapixel.
It's an interesting proposition. You know where you walk in and you go, you want to choose your plan. I want this many phone calls and this much data. And yeah, and I want a cheap camera and a big screen and a fast, you know, wireless connection.
Yes. Build your own phone. Cool.
But I can't imagine that's going to come out with the, you know, the sort of end product that we see around the table.
It has to work. They've got a lot of really good designers on the project and things. And this is where I really geek out. And my phone is just about 2 years old when Ara comes out in early 2015. So I'm like, maybe that's planning my next phone. Mm. But I don't know. So current iterations of it don't work very well. They've had to rewrite large swaths of the Android code to make it work with all that modular kind of design and everything. So,
okay. Spot quiz. So Android is called Android L, breaking from the dessert tradition. What would you guys call the dessert version of Android L?
I actually know what they might be calling it.
Ooh. Oh, okay. It's insider.
Yeah, have you got inside information?
Or? I work for Telstra. I'm supposed to have this insider.
Oh, it's insider as much as I found at some articles. There's a bunch of people that are watching. Android's open source, so there's a lot of people that are watching every commit that goes into Android and trying to look at all the comments and things like that. So at least internally, there was a comment that went in on the Android open source project that said LMP, which everyone is thinking lemon meringue pie. So it might, because they wanted to call the previous key lime pie, but that's very American, not very international. So they ended up going with Kit Kat.
Yeah, ice cream sandwich is pretty American. We call it, you know, chalk wedge or Eskimo pie or something like that.
Gay time.
They're like their long names, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's a pretty good response to that question, I think. It's very detailed.
Is it actually going to, like, have a name, or is it L?
They're only calling it L just for the preview.
Right. Okay, so they are going back to dessert names.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. They're said to. They were very unspecific about it at Google I/O.
All the big issues. We're tackling all the big issues here today.
These are the ones that count. These are the ones that we talk about around the lunch table, actually. obviously, we've talked about Android L. Anything specific you're excited about from a feature perspective?
Well, I think, you know, if we continue, really, it's just getting easier and easier to use Android. And I like that as a consumer myself. And, you know, perhaps that's why I've gravitated to the Nexus 5. So if we continue that trajectory and evolution, you know, combine that with something like, you know, modular or choice of components, you know, this... We just keep getting more and more personal in terms of what customers, our customers can do, and what we as consumers can do with our smartphones. We're really excited about being able to help curate and distribute some apps that we think are helpful and give customers a choice to choose from a curated list of apps during their kind of first time user experience. And as customers move from, say, a feature phone, and when we still operate a lot of feature phones on our network into smartphones, it can still be a little bit daunting. And not everyone's an early adopter who can, you know, grab what they want from Play or from the App Store. So we see a great role for us with Android L to help curate that app distribution, and not only some of our great apps that you guys have been involved with, whether that's Sport or beyond, but some other apps that we think are useful. You know, Evernote's a pretty cool app.
Yeah.
And, but if you haven't used a smartphone before and you're not a tablet user, you probably don't know what Evernote is.
Yeah.
So some of those little...
So do you provide when you go and buy an Android phone, do you provide a sort of, here's a list of Telstra recommended apps?
We do that today. It's pretty much published on Telstra.com.
Right.
One of the capabilities that Android L will bring us is some of that curation.
Okay.
So we can work with the manufacturer, and Telstra in this case is the carrier, to curate that list and enable our customers to
I saw a rumor on somewhere last week that Verizon were bringing out their own App Store. And so I sort of, is that something that you guys would consider?
Yes and no. I mean, there's a role for Telstra in App Store space in the business area. And so, you know, the take-up of tablets for us in business is you know, enormous. It's the fastest growing tablet segment for us at Telstra. So the question then is, businesses who are buying tablets increasingly want some software on those tablets to power and get the most from that investment. So, you know, is it Telstra providing a bespoke or proprietary app store? No, I think it very much fits in that curation and act as an endorser and having reviewed and perhaps a layer of trust on some of the apps recommended by Telstra.
But, yeah, so we shouldn't expect a time where you rip out the App Store, the Google Play Store, and it's like a Telstra store on the phones.
No, I mean, that's not something we've got planned at the moment.
Yet. Do you think you could teach someone like my dad, who's, I'll frame him a bit, big, hairy, bikey, looks a little bit like our producer, but he's got this old flip phone, and his favourite feature on this, he's been with Telstra since day zero, and his favourite feature on his old flip phone is that it plays, he's from Western Australia, it plays the West Coast Eagles ringtone when someone calls, and he thinks that's the future and has no idea what I'm doing at all. He just goes, my son's going to be the next Steve Jobs. That's Apple.
Well, he's got Android. The hoodie, not the black skivvies.
Yeah.
Well, Telstra covers, you know, an enormous market segment. I mean, the whole of Australia. And so it's not necessarily about teaching or kind of forcing, it's just about enabling. So when there are things that we can do to provide connectivity and capability that your dad may choose is beneficial for him at a point in time. Now, we can help and do so a lot through our retail stores today, break down that barrier to entry, that fear of kind of moving from something he's familiar with into a smartphone that all of a sudden, when I press down on the screen, you know, I can't feel the button click anymore. Or, you know, so there's a whole bunch of change and you know, our job is to not be complacent as, you know, early adopters and remember who we're here to serve. And that's the people of Australia. And you mentioned before the flip phone. Well, there's an interesting take on the flip phone. I don't know if you guys have been to Japan recently, but the flip phone is alive and well in Japan.
Oh, really?
It's alive and well, yes. And I asked a number of people whilst I was in Japan, why is it everyone's got the flip phone? And it's quite a longer style phone. And I was told that that the angle of the screen is easier to read on the subway.
Okay.
So the fact that the screen will sort of pivot back at around 30 or 40 degrees means that that you can see it and you don't get a sore neck and people aren't overlooking what's on your screen when you're on the subway. Now, I'm not sure what's being read or viewed on the subway, but you know, well, if someone's overlooking you.
I know you're not allowed to actually talk on the phone in Japan on the subway. It's illegal.
No, you have to go to the end of the carriage.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, I think we're nearly out of time, but I think we just wanted to throw you one more question, an easy one. Some favorite apps of yours and why? Well, and you can't say Evernote.
I can't say Evernote, no. Well, I mean, I'll start with the AFL app because...
we can say that's... We're happy for you to say that one. Correct.
I love the AFL app because I think it connects me with something I love, and it's not about technology first. It's about a personal passion of mine, and I'm sure I'm not the only AFL fan out there. But it's interesting you say that because I look at then... The first thing I did was looked at my home screen to say, well, what's on there at the moment? You know, from a business sense, I'm really enjoying the fact that I can get access to Google Analytics through their native app on my phone at the moment. That's quite cool because, you know, previously I had to, you know, get my laptop out and fire it up. So, you know, it's reduced the effort in my life to do something I need to do regularly. I've been using Facebook Messenger a bit lately to chat with our some friends who are overseas. Let's just say that the simplicity of Yo as an application is also represented in its boxed purple icon. Or is that purple or magenta? It's kind of somewhere in the middle.
Were you okay with them splitting Messenger out of the main Facebook app? There has been uproar.
There has been uproar. Well, I'm not the most active user of Facebook Messenger, but we've seen this trend of splitting. I think Foursquare split out the core app with Swarm, and Facebook have followed with Messenger, and I think it's a challenge. So as these apps grow organically in terms of capability, you can increasingly offer a richer experience by with a bespoke application. And we do that with Telstra. We have a fantastic app called Stay Connected, which helps you back up content from your phone. And we can deliver a better experience in that app and make it work nicely with 24/7 than we would increasing the file size of 24/7 for everyone. Because not everyone wants Stay Connected app. It's a great product, but there's no point in making our core app 30 or 40 meg when we can keep it 6 meg and deliver that experience through a companion app. So I like to look at this notion of a companion app, and the job then of developers like you guys is to make those apps work really nicely together from an identity perspective and from, you know, being able to seamlessly move. And there's some great things happening in iOS that are going to enable that experience, make it a lot easier to move in between apps instead of from app to home screen, from home screen to companion app. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've got some really good ways. Android L with activity scene transitions. Come and talk to us, I'll get them all sorted.
And for the geeks out there, another favourite app, Tasker. Tasker for Android. So
this is a Telstra favourite.
Yeah.
Hugh Bradlow.
Yeah, Hugh Bradlow talks about that as well. That's lets you fire trigger tasks based on your location.
Yeah. So,
is that right?
So in my car, so I might not present as a geek, but I can tell you I very much grew up geek. I have a Android head unit in my car.
Wow.
Which
the
is
parrot
a
one?
It's a no. It's actually made by CarFi.
Okay.
It's I think they're a Chinese or a Hong Kong manufacturer, and it runs Android, and it's got It's not a SIM based platform, but it does have a Wi-Fi dongle. So I was struggling to work out how I can always get my CarFi Android unit to get online as soon as I got in the car. And so what I did was use the Tasker app to trigger a task on my phone that when it connect to Bluetooth, it also turned on the portable Wi-Fi hotspot, and then used Tasker on the other Android head unit to connect to that hotspot as soon as it was available. So
that is very geeky.
It's beauty of Android. All right, cool. I think that's a really good spot to wrap up on because I have to go out and get a task, get that for my car now. Cool. Thank you very much for joining us, Monty.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me in here. We can open the blinds now. It's a beautiful Melbourne day. Wherever you're listening, the truth is out there. Melbourne, it's blue skies, 21 degrees outside.
I know. I don't know what that weird orb is in the sky, but it makes me happy. Yeah. Cool. Thank you very much, Danny and Luce.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And Mr. Andy as well. Always ever silent, watching over. Join us next time.